were talking about the schools, the grammar school in your community, Jack. Tell us a little more.
Well, we were, it was a three-room schoolhouse, and each room consisted of three grades, 1, 2, and 3, 4, 5, and 6, 7, 8, and 9. And, of course, at that time, a lot of the children in the 8th and 9th grade began to drop out because they were, you know, getting to be grown, and ages was coming up on them. And back then, children dropped out of school more so than they do this day and time. It was, there wasn't, I don't guess, over 50% of the county schools that, what I'm trying to say, I don't guess there's over 50% of the children in the 8th and 9th grade had ever went ahead and finished through the 12th grade. And years later, then it began to increase of where more of them had more money to buy clothes and books with and to go. But when we was in the grammar school, of course, we didn't have any money to buy books with, and most everybody that possibly could would hand their books down from grade to grade, either give them to some of the families or at very, very little cost, and very few people ever charged for them. I know in my situation, I would hand my books down to somebody in the grade lower than me, and fortunately, somebody in the grade above me that was passing would probably pass theirs on down to me with very little cost, if any at all. Mm-hmm. And people just didn't have the money back then to buy new books with each year like they do this day and time. Mm-hmm. And it was tough. A lot of times you'd get a book with half the pages tore out, and you'd just have to guess what was supposed to be in there.
So it seems like as much as half of the kids about that last year of grammar school or 7th, 8th, 9th was about the last years that they were in school?
They were a lot and a lot of children at, in this 7th, 8th, and 9th grade would begin to drop out of school and not go ahead and finish. Mm. One thing was because times were so hard that they just didn't have the money or the clothes sufficient to wear. Mm-hmm. And even though times were hard as it was, people still had their pride. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing. People had more pride back then than they do this day and time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we had to go to school with... my mother always kept my overalls clean, but most of the time I didn't have a two pair, and I'd wear one pair and come in that afternoon and pull it off and hang it up and where I wouldn't get out and get dirty working or playing in it.
Uh-huh.
But most all the families were like that, and when the children get up in the 8th, 9th, and 10th grade, maybe 11th and 12th grade, if they didn't have sufficient clothes and sufficient money to buy their books and things with, a lot of them would drop out because of that. Not that they didn't want to go, but they just weren't able to go, and maybe situations occurred where they had to drop out to help farm or help their family make the living.
I understand. Let's move on a little bit to a different subject.
Okay.
Did you know anything about the war in Europe? This is prior to the U.S. involvement, but had you heard anything, or were you hearing anything about the war going on in Europe between Germany and England and France?
Well, naturally, it was on the radios, was on the news, and at that time, we were one of the few people was fortunate enough to have a little radio. A lot of people didn't have one, and no televisions at all back then.
So your family did have a radio.
So we had purchased a radio, or somebody had given us a radio or something. Anyway, we had a radio.
Mm-hmm.
In the early years of the war, so we began to listen to it and knew it was going on and knew it was coming on, but we didn't. I don't guess people back then realized it was that close to us. Is what it was.
Was there ever any talk about when and if or what the United States might become involved? Or
yeah, there was a lot of talk of it, and
were the people's sentiments that they would rather stay out of that war? Or?
Well, a lot of them were, and then a lot of them, you know, looked at it like this. If we don't go to war, then it's coming over here to us, and that's something that the people in the United States did not want. They did not want the war over here, mm-hmm. and they felt like eventually if we didn't go over there, when Germany overrun everything over there, then eventually they would come over here.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest part of the people, if you had taken a poll on it, I feel like the great majority of the people had a lot rather go over there and fight the war than to come over here.
Right, right. So the radio was where you received most of your information.
That's where we received ours.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember hearing about the Japanese sneak attack on Pearl Harbor?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was one Sunday, and we had a little community store out there that most everybody, if they didn't have any place to go and anywhere to go, they'd go around the store there on Sunday afternoon, sit around and talk. And again, I was just a kid, so to speak, but that Sunday, I was going from home up to the store, and I got to the house just before I got to the store, and the, one of the teenagers ran out and hollered and told me, said the Pearl Harbor has, the Japs has attacked Pearl Harbor, and said they are bombing it over there. Of course, we had, you know, been hearing about it and hearing about it, but we didn't realize we're going to be that close at that quick a time. And it kind of shocked the community when it did happen.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it kindly, that was the talk then for the next few days, was what was going on over there and what was happening, how many men we'd lost and how many ships we'd lost. And of course, we had a lot of friends, not really out of the community, but we had a lot of friends that had friends that were on some of the ships that were lost over there. And of course, that was grieving all of us around it, you, all those people.
Sure. So they, you knew of people that had kinfolk that was
right,
out there,
right?
Isn't that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And
did so after this time? Did of course the United States declared war?
Mm-hmm.
And did it seem to a lot of people, the younger people of the age group, volunteer for service?
Or? Yeah, they did at that time because they knew. Sooner or later, that's when they started the induction.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew sooner or later that they're going to be inducted. And a lot of them went ahead and volunteered, hoping to get in the branch of service that they really wanted in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wanted in the Navy, and a lot of people wanted in the Army, and a lot of people wanted here and there. And by volunteering, they pretty well had their choice in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on and the departments or the Army and the Navy began to fill up of what they needed, then they began to induct draftees and send them wherever they were needed the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I know in my particular case, when I was inducted, of course, the Army was losing a lot of people in Europe and a lot of people in Japan. And the Army needed people worse than Navy did. They give you a choice. You might say on paper when you're filling your application out, would you rather go to the Navy or Army? And I put down Navy, but that didn't mean anything at that time because they sent you where they needed you, which Army was where they needed me.
Right.
And
so how old were you? You were inducted?
I was inducted at the age of 19.
Uh-huh.
I was drafted at the age of 18. I was 18 in March, and they drafted me in July. And I had a physical condition at that time, and they turned me down.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year later, of course, at the first time they inducted me, they were giving you a pretty close examination. And then a year later, when they really needed people to go bad, they wasn't examining you as close that time as they did before. And you just about had to be handicapped at that time to be turned down.
Is that right?
So you either had to have a leg off, an arm off, or eye out, or just about half dead, so to speak.
So the second time they inducted you, they weren't
looking too close. They were looking for men.
Okay.
I was 18 years old and weighed 135 pounds.
So you were, after you were inducted then, is that when you were telling me earlier that you, where you did your basic training?
Well, I was inducted into Fort McClellan at Anniston, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And we rode a troop train from there to Shelby, Mississippi and got processed, and they sent us, or sent me rather, and a lot of the boys with me down to Fort Hood, Texas, which originally was a tank camp, and they had taken part of it and made an infantry camp out of it. Mm-hmm. So they had us in the what they call the armored infantry, and that's what we'd taken our training for, was infantry. But when we finished there in 17 weeks, of course, in the Army, among the draftees, you can hear all kinds of rumors that what has been said and what's going to happen and this, that, and the other. And, of course, any of it's true. Everybody's just guessing at what's happening. But at the end of 17 weeks, they sent me to, excuse me, to Fort Meade, Maryland. And they gave me a 14-day delay in route on the way. And I left home about 2 days before Christmas. In fact, I got to Fort Meade on Christmas Eve day, and I checked in, and they turned around and gave me a 3-day pass. And a lot of the boys stayed at home during that time, and I was afraid to, because, you know, being young like I was, I thought, well, they court-martialed me, this, that, and the other. But the boys that stayed at home for the extra 3 days, they came back and got in there just like we did, and nothing was said about it.
Uh-huh.
But from Fort Meade, Maryland, they loaded us on a troop ship and sent us to Le Havre, France, and from there into the what they call the separation centers, into the centers to where they send you wherever you need it worse. And they sent most of our boys into either the 11th Armored Division or the 1st Airborne Division, which they were fighting side by side, and both divisions had lost, I guess, half of their people or more.
Mm. So you went directly from there to France.
Mm-hmm.
And then
from France to the center in France, and they sent you out to wherever wherever your division was, you would join in.
Did you? Who was the commander of the division? Did you know about?
General Patton. We was in the 3rd Army Division. I mean, the 3rd Army, 11th Armored was part of the 3rd Army, and General Patton was general over the 3rd Army.
Mm-hmm. Had you heard of him?
We called him Blood and Gut.
I see.
That was his nickname.
Had you heard anything about in talk about General Patton? Or
oh yes, yes. He was one of the famous generals over there. He is one that did not believe in giving up, and I admire him for that. But occasionally he would ride through. I think he came by us once or twice during the time we was over there, and of course, he had guards with him all the time, and which he had to. But at the same time, he might just drive through and wave his hand, or maybe never stop, or something like that, because mm-hmm. He was such an important part of winning that war that he did not have really time, and it wasn't his job really to go out and associate with the troops. But he did come by where we were a couple of times and maybe just wave his hand or drive through where we was at or something mm-hmm. like that.
What was the general opinion of General Patton, or did you hear or talk much about that?
Oh yeah, everybody admired that man, and everybody gave him praises, so to speak, for the job he was doing over there. And of course, he had some fine officers under him
mm-hmm.
that taken orders real well, and it was handed right on down from General Patton right on down to the lowest rank, which was a buck private at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that if General Patton had been in a position that he would bend down on the lower level with a buck private, just like he was as being a general.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt about him.